Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. New time is going to be the same result, though. On this 20th of February 2010, I'm your host, Cyril Quinn, taking you for the next hour, and we'll get right to it. Tiger Woods, of course, came out with his statement, and, you know, as I'm sitting up there, I had the transcript looking at it right now, and also, of course, watched it on television, got a chance to watch it later on over the course of the day on television. And listen, I'm going to be honest with you. He looked like a robot making a failed attempt to generate human emotion. And man, this is no shtick. This is not me trying to get a laugh. I'm being dead serious here. I mean, he looked uncomfortable. He looked, again, I'm not going to sit up and tell you I know what's in Tiger Woods' heart, being him being genuine. I do know this. That apology yesterday was an absolute joke. To me, he was apologizing. Forget about apologizing to the world of golf. Forget about apologizing to even, you know, the fans. He's apologizing. That was an apology to his business partners. Okay? That was a business move. Tiger Woods yesterday showed you what he's truly all about. He had an opportunity to humanize himself. He had an opportunity to be vulnerable. And, you know, he chose to go in a different route. And it began before yesterday. It began when this whole thing came out about how the speech was going to be formatted, about how, you know, no statement, no questions, no press conference. And I absolutely don't blame the Golf Writers of America, for boycotting it. Because it's a joke. What media member in worth his weight and would waste his time even going there, even if he were one of the few people invited there or was able to get there? You can't ask questions. I mean, all you can do is just watch it on TV and gauge it like I'm gauging it right now. Or write a column on it, have your comments on it, and what have you. So I totally don't blame the Golf Writers for boycotting that statement. It's Tiger Woods. Again, Tiger Woods again showed you. I'm a golfer, businessman. Now, sure, had he chose to go the route of allowing the media to ask him questions and making it like a regular press conference, he would have got ate up. There's no question about it. But you know what? At least it shows a vulnerability. It shows he's not reading off a prepared speech, which to me was another joke. I mean, you're looking at the paper. You're spending half your time looking down, and about the other half, maybe popping your head up and looking at the camera maybe a couple times. You know, it was a monotone read speech. It was so staged. Hey, you can't. I mean, I'm hearing all the stuff about it. I didn't see the speech at the time that it happened. You know, of course, it's at 11 a.m. I'm at work. Got a chance to see it on the, watch it on the internet. But all I'm hearing about is how staged it was, it couldn't be that staged. It couldn't be as bad as people thought it was. It was worse. And then for him to try to switch it around and start pointing fingers at the media, that's why he didn't want the media there, because the media was like, hold on, Tiger, you know, we didn't cheat on our wife. You know, we wasn't driving with no shoes, you know, crashing into fire hydrants and whatnot. I mean, it's the trees. I mean, please, you don't point fingers at the media. Well, the media makes up all these stories. Well, when you don't talk for 10 weeks after something like that happens, you know, rumors and innuendos are going to come out. Again, this is who what Tiger Woods is. Just like we find out who Michael Jordan is at his Hall of Fame speech in a, you know, in a situation that was obviously not a, a lesser, you know, lesser that, you know, carried lesser of a magnitude. We find out who Tiger Woods really is. Let me, I'm going to read the key, to me, the key part of the speech. To everyone involved in my foundation, including my staff, board of directors, sponsors, and most importantly, the young students we've reached, our work is, we've reached, our work is more important than ever. 13 years ago, my dad and I envisioned helping young people achieve their dreams through education. This remains unchanged, and I will continue to grow from the learning students in Southern California to the Earl Scholars in Washington, D.C. Now, he finishes with the kids and talking about the importance of the students. But look, forget about how he finishes. Look how he begins. My foundation, including my staff, board of directors, sponsors. And by the way, the kids, let me not forget about the kids. Oh, and here's another part. I'm also aware of the pain and the pain of my behavior has caused to those of you in this room, which the people, his mother along with his basically yes man. I have let you down, and I've also let down my fans. For many of you, especially my friends, my behavior has been a personal disappointment. To those of you who work for me, I have let you down personally and professionally. My behavior has caused considerable worry to my business partners. Sorry, Gatorade. Sorry, Accenture. My fault, Phil Knight, Nike. Thanks for sticking with me. I mean, again, this is who Tiger Woods is. Tiger Woods, golfer first, business person, you know, businessman second. Somewhere in between there, somewhere within there, he's a father and a husband. Somewhere, you know, I'm not going to gauge where that ranks on his list of priorities. That's not my job, but somewhere in there. And, you know, he took about to at least almost the end of the whole speech to even acknowledge that, you know, how much of an embarrassment he had been to golf over the course of this situation. But again, this should not be any shock to anybody whatsoever, because when it came out that Woods was going to have this whole thing, you know, micromanaged, that he was going to have, you know, take no questions, go have a set group of people which he handpicked to be there in that room. It was about 40 people. He knew he wasn't going to say anything, much of anything. It wasn't going to be a real press conference. It was going to be him giving off, you know, he said some things that he had to say. I take blame, I this, I that. But you also pointed fingers at media members. You know, it was one of those apologies, yeah, but. That's what it was. It was like one of those yeah, but apologies. Not everything is on me. I'll take blame for this, but you know what? This part wasn't my fault. And let me tell you something. Woods could care less about the golf fans. Please, Woods is worried about his sponsors. He's worried about his image. And to me, had he went out there in front of the media, in the firing line, and took the shots, he would have came off. Not so much being sympathized, but he would have came. He had a chance to bring himself down to the level of, I'm just a man who is struggling with his marriage, who's going through a rough patch with his marriage, who made a mistake, and who was seeking forgiveness. I'm just a man. If he would have directly took the beating from me, because right now he's taking a beating regardless. He was going to take a beating either directly or indirectly. And I'm going to tell you something. I can't believe how many prominent media members were fooled by this. I mean, Michael Wilbon, I have all the respect in the world for Michael Wilbon as a writer and as what he's done, you know, with the show PCI. I mean, I have tremendous amount of respect for Wilbon. When Michael Wilbon had come out and say, I was moved, it was a powerful speech. I mean, are you kidding me? You were moved? I mean, when I was watching, I'm looking at that speech, I was sick to my stomach watching that speech. I'm like, this is, you know, like I'm watching bad acting. That's what it was like, bad acting. But he goes out there and shoots a 61 on the first day of the Masters. Nobody will care. That's the whole funny thing about it. Nobody will care. Right? That's the world we live in sports. Nobody will care. Still to come, we'll look inside the NBA. Big week in the NBA as far as trades. You had a classic NBA night on Thursday where four teams who had championship aspirations went at it. We'll talk about that in 2010. Also, we'll have our first Black History Profile. Black History Profile. He was considered to be one of the greatest. We'll talk about him and so much more still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. You can hit me up at twitter.com/WilliamGerald. You want to post a comment, I'll respond to it. No phones today. We'll work on that, getting the phones, you know, set up in the upcoming weeks. But also you can hit me up at Facebook profile, again, William Gerald at www.facebook.com/WilliamGerald. Hit me up, hit my wall up there, and post a couple comments. So we'll be right back after this update. Tiger Woods has spoken publicly for the first time since he ran his SUV into a tree outside his Florida home. Woods apologized for cheating on his wife and cited that he had let down business partners and fans, in that order, by the way. Woods did not give a specific timetable on when he will return to golf. Multiple team sources have reported that former Dallas Maverick Josh Howard's off-the-court behavior contributed to him being traded. Team sources have reported that Howard missed a January 20th game against the Washington Wizards due to being hungover the night before. Through a text message to ESPN 103.3 FM host Ben Rogers, Howard has denied the report. NBA scores: Charlotte all over Cleveland, 110-93. In his Cleveland debut, Antoine Jameson had a rough night, only scored 2 points, was 0-for-12 from the field in just 26 minutes of play. Denver falls to Washington, 107-97. Dallas over Orlando, 95-85. Philadelphia defeats San Antonio, 106-94. New Orleans, 107. Indiana, 101. Milwaukee, 91. Detroit, 85. Charlotte, Chicago, 100. Minnesota, 94. Toronto, 106. New Jersey, 89. Miami, 100. Memphis, 87 in double overtime. Phoenix over Atlanta, 88-80. Late scores: Utah, 100. Golden State, 89. And the Celtics all over Portland, 96-76. Of course, a big week in the NBA. A bunch of trades. I mean, I could spend a whole show on how many trades there were. A lot of action. You know, you had a lot of action going on in regards to that. But and I'll get to who I thought came out winners and losers. But you got to get to the first one. The biggie right away is, of course, the Cleveland Cavaliers getting one Antoine Jameson, that stretch four who can go out there, shoot the three, who can, you know, doesn't need a play ran for him, who can match up with the Rashard Lewis's of the world. They get rid of Ilgauskas. Ilgauskas goes to Washington, which his contract probably will be bought out. And listen, this is a move that Cleveland had to make. Their team, as currently constructed, probably was not good enough to win a championship, despite the fact that they had prior to last night, had won 13 straight games. And I'm going to tell you right now, it doesn't matter. There's nothing, I don't think there's anything that they can do to keep LeBron James in Cleveland. And what I mean by that, I'm not saying he will not stay, but, you know, they could still win a championship and he could leave just as easy as they could not win a championship and he could leave. I don't think he comes down to that. That's a whole thing that we've been missing with this LeBron James thing. But again, Dan, you got to give Dan Ferry credit. He has added pieces to that team year in and year out. That team has gotten better every single year since LeBron James got there in terms of him adding pieces. Now, of course, James has become a better player, but, you know, he gets Mo Williams becomes an all-star. He gets Shaq. That move has worked up to this point. Shaq has been healthy for the most part, played well, especially of late. Now he gets, gets Antoine Jameson and does not give up J.J. Hickson, which I will get to that to the Phoenix part of this trade because I don't understand what the Phoenix Suns are trying to accomplish, what they're trying to do. But that was a big part. That was, to me, that was big in not losing J.J. Hickson. And, you know, listen, that team has a legit chance to win a championship. There's no getting around it. That team has a legit chance of winning a championship, And it's something, again, that Cleveland absolutely had to do. And I know, listen, I'm not surprised at all that they lost last night. They're coming off a emotional playoff-type game in overtime loss to the Denver Nuggets. I'll talk about that game. I will certainly get to that game. It was a classic. And Charlotte has played them tough this year. I mean, Charlotte has beat them three times this year and just a tough matchup for Cleveland. So I'm not surprised that they lost that game. But, again, they get that man. They get Jameson. Stoudemire is a better player than Antoine Jameson, but he would not have been a better fit than Antoine Jameson. He can't play with Shaq. And he can't, not only can he not play with Shaq, you clog the middle between him and Shaq. That's less room for James to operate. And he does not – and Stoudemire does not stretch out the floor like Antoine Jameson as far as from the three-point line. So Stoudemire, better player. Jameson, better fit. And people will say, well, Jameson has a couple of years on his contract at $28 million and that, you know, he's 34 years old. The time is now for Cleveland. I mean, they're trying to win a championship, like, right now. So you worry about that. If LeBron James is still on the team, you don't care about Jameson's contract. Period. As far as the other, to me, the other big winner, there were three big winners in this, three big-time winners. You had Cleveland, of course, the Bulls, and the Knicks. The Bulls, you know, they traded. Their team probably is worse off than they were a couple of days ago in getting rid of Solomon's, but you know what? They have now cleared enough cap space to where they can add a max player to their basketball, to their team come 2010. So you can add a max player to Derrick Rose, one of the best young point guards in the league, Joakim Noah, who plays as hard as anybody in the league, and a guy that would love to have on a championship caliber team. That's all there is to it. That guy is going to be a double-double every night, and he's going to be amongst the league leader in rebounding every year. You love to have that guy on you. He's a perfect glue guy. And you still have Kurt Heinrich. So you can add a Chris Bosh or a Dwayne Wade, or even, an Amari Stoudemire to that team, dude, that's a great job by Chicago. I mean, I don't think LeBron James would go to Chicago, but they even had the money to add him, okay? I mean, they've put themselves in a great position quietly. Everybody's talking about the Knicks, everybody's talking about some other teams, but watch out for Chicago as far as this free agent thing, as far as the free agency goes next summer. And, again, they have the piece they have. They already have ready pieces that are in place. Brad Miller still can play. They have pieces already in place. Most importantly, Derrick Rose. They can sell you on the city, big market, plenty of exposure as far as the guy, you know, to get endorsements, things of that nature. And they're going to be talking to Dwayne Wade. But Chicago, to me, came off a big winner. And the New York Knicks, how long has it been since you've ever been able to say that the New York Knicks did something right? Knicks cleared $30 million worth of cash space. They get Tracy McGrady. Who cares about that? I mean, McGrady is going to basically be a 2-month rental for the Knicks. I know he's talking about taking less money to keep him on, to stay on next year possibly. We'll see about that. But most importantly, they cleared enough cap space to get to garner two max contract players, meaning they can go out there and get LeBron James and a Chris Bosh. They can get LeBron James, and unlikely a Dwayne Wade. They can get Dwayne Wade, a Chris Bosh. Any combination of two max players they are able to get, they're going to get two of these players. There's no, because money talks, and it's New York City. If I were a New York Knicks fan, I would feel very confident about getting LeBron James right now. I have to be honest with you, whether he wins a championship or not. I mean, you can get LeBron James. You can bring him in. They have some pretty good pieces already there as well. It's not, you know, Wilson, David Lee is a 2010 guy, basically, okay? Wilson Chandler is a very good player, very underrated. I like his game a lot. You can get some low-end free agents, not a big deal. You can do it, you know, basically what the Boston Celtics did a couple years ago. You know, they brought in Garnett and Ray Allen. You got guys like James Posey, P.J. Brown, Eddie House. Not superstars, but small pieces, and it worked out well for them. So to me, the Knicks get over big time with this. They get over big time with this deal. And again, if you're a New York Knicks fan, you certainly have to be happy about the future prospects of your team, considering where you have been for the last 10 years. Since Patrick, the downfall of the Knicks began in 1997 when Patrick Ewing broke his wrist. That's really when it began. But it has been terrible over this past decade with the Patrick Ewing being traded and with the signing of a $100 million contract to Allen Houston. Those two moves really messed the Knicks up for a long, long time, and they still haven't recovered. But this summer should change that. As far as the team, I mean, a couple other trades. Of course, you had, I think Boston got over getting Nate Robinson. I mean, that guy can come off your bench, get you 30, 25 to 30 at any given night. He's instant energy. He's a guy who is just, you know, he's going to help them out a lot because they're struggling for offense. When they get into droughts, they really can go through long periods where they don't score. I love what Houston did as far as getting Kevin Martin. They have a chance to get the New York Knicks draft pick in 2011 or 2012, depending on how the Knicks finish. And, I mean, that team, they're going to be in a position as well to possibly make a move for 2010. They'll hopefully get Yao Ming back. Houston, clearly to me, made a very good move. And I know Carl Leonard's a pretty good player, but you get a Kevin Martin back who can drop 20 to 25 points on a given night, pair him up with Aaron Brooks. That's definitely a pretty good backcourt. Phoenix Suns, I don't understand what Phoenix is trying to accomplish. Phoenix, listen, Amari Stoudemire is not Wilt Chamberlain. So, you know, to me, J.J. Hickson, an expiring contract with Ilgauskas, would have been more than enough for Amari Stoudemire. I mean, were there any better offers that were put on the table than that? Now they're going to go into next year. Stoudemire is going to opt out. He's not staying in Phoenix in 2010, 2011. He's going to opt out, become a free agent, and get paid. Because everybody's not going to be able to sign Dwayne Wade and LeBron James and Chris Bosh. After that, Stoudemire probably is the fourth guy that you would sign. He's going to get money. Somebody's going to pay him a max deal somewhere. And he's going to want to sign his deal before this new collective bargaining agreement comes into play, in 2011. So he will absolutely exercise his option. He will opt out and leave that $17 million on the table. There's no question about it. So, again, I don't know what the Phoenix Suns were trying to accomplish with not moving Stoudemire. They kind of sat on their hands. You can't blame Cleveland at all for not getting Stoudemire. They put the offer out there. Phoenix, you know, basically got cold feet. Also on Thursday, you had a classic doubleheader: Denver, Cleveland, Boston, L.A. Cleveland and Denver, a shootout. Boston, L.A. Old time basketball was, you know,
basically, I like how Doug Collins described it, 3 yards in a cloud of dust, you know, 87 to 86. Denver showed you what they're all about in back-to-back days. They go out there, beat Cleveland, coming off the George Karl announcement that he has throat cancer, and, you know, they go out there, beat Cleveland, snap their winning streak in overtime, and then they come out against the Washington Wizards team, who you need basically a scorecard to keep up with who's on the team now, box score, to keep up who's on the team. They go out there and lose the Washington Wizards by 10 points. That's Denver. I mean, they can beat anybody, but they're still not consistent enough for you to trust against a team like the Lakers in a big spot. They're good enough to beat the Lakers, but mentally, they're not there yet. There's no way they should lose to Washington Wizards. I don't even care coming off of back-to-back. Cleveland's loss is understandable. Charlotte has had that number, and Charlotte, is a pretty good team. Washington, that's inexcusable for the Denver Nuggets. As far as Boston, L.A. goes, again, took you back to, I mean, it looked like an old Miami Heat New York Knicks game. I mean, it was a defensive battle. Listen, offensive struggle, of course, the Lakers without Kobe Bryant, but the defense down the stretch in the fourth quarter was just, by both teams, was locked down. I mean, it was a great defense. It was a great game to watch. It was certainly a great game to watch. And I'm going to take the Boston perspective because we know what the Lakers are. If Kobe's healthy, they're still the team to beat in the NBA, in my opinion. But if you're a Boston fan right now, you have to be encouraged. Because I saw a bounce in Kevin Garnett's step that I hadn't seen all season. I saw a bounce in Ray Allen that I hadn't seen, maybe with the trade deadline passing, taking the pressure off him. I think Boston is on his way back. And to me, you know, everybody wants to give the Eastern Conference title to Cleveland. I would say not so fast. Because they still match up as well as anyone in the Eastern Conference with the Cleveland Cavaliers. Gun to my head, I probably have to pick lean towards Cleveland. I'll probably lean towards Cleveland, but I'll say it reluctantly, considering that the Boston Celtics will be right there against the Cleveland Cavaliers. If you're Cleveland, I don't think you really want to see Boston in the playoffs, to be honest with you. And this is it for Boston as far as their run. I think they realize that as a team, they're not gonna come out and say it, that this is it for them in terms of winning a championship. But I really like how Boston, that was a big win in Portland last night, beating them by 20. I know they're banged up, but listen, one of the toughest places to play in the league, coming off a tough game against the Lakers, that's a big-time win. Beating the Lakers is a big win, even without Kobe Bryant. Lakers were playing well in L.A., so the Celtics look like they're well on their way back. Again, I may be the last one who's on that bandwagon, but I'm telling you right now, they are not. They are far from being finished. Far from it. Still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, we'll go inside the ropes with one of the greatest of all time. And also, we'll look inside college basketball. A surprise conference may get six in. I'll tell you which conference that is. That's still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. I'm your host, Surreal Quinn, taking you to the bottom half of the 12 o'clock hour. Of the 12 o'clock hour to 12:30. I'll be back. Here is the update. Tiger Woods spoke publicly for the first time since he ran his SUV into a tree outside his Florida home. Woods apologized for cheating on his wife and cited that he had let down business partners and fans. Woods did not give a specific timetable on when he will return to golf. Multiple team sources have reported that former Dallas Maverick Josh Howard's off-the-court behavior contributed to him to being traded. Team sources have reported that Howard missed a January 20th game against the Washington Wizards due to being hungover the night before. Through a text message to ESPN 103.3 host Ben Rogers, Howard has denied the report. NBA scores. Charlotte pounds Cleveland 110-93. Antoine Jameson in his Cleveland debut struggled 2 points, just 2 points on 0-for-12 shooting in 26 minutes of play. Washington over Denver 107-97. Dallas 95, Orlando 85, Philadelphia 106, San Antonio 94, New Orleans 107, Indiana 91, Milwaukee 91, Detroit 85, Chicago 100, Minnesota 94, Toronto 106, New Jersey 89, Miami 100, Memphis 87 in double overtime, Phoenix 88, Atlanta 80, late scores, Utah 100, Golden State 89, Boston 96, Portland 76. Welcome back. Top of the hour here on a Saturday morning wake up call. Still, I will take you, of course, to 12:30. Again, you can hit me up at twitter.com/WilliamGerald. Post any comments that you may have on there. Also, hit me up on my Facebook page William Gerald on Facebook as well. Of course, our Black History Profile of the week is Muhammad Ali. Of course, he called himself the greatest of all time. I have a quick story about that at towards the end of the segment. Ali, you look at showmen in sports, and we've had some classic showmen in sports. Whether Michael Jordan Michael Jordan comes to mind, what he did on the court. Deion Sanders comes to mind on the football field, a guy like Billy White Shoes Johnson, who was a famous kickoff and punt returner for the Houston Oilers back in the day. But there was only really truly one showman in the history of sports that stands above all of them. Of course, that is Muhammad Ali. You talk about these guys who always yipping and yapping and talking, talk, and go out there and can't play. Ali was one of the first to go out there and back up. Actually, he was actually better than what he said he was. I mean, you look at the fighters that he beat. You look at the fact that he lost 3 years due to him being stripped of his title because of his refusal to go into the U.S. Army. Look at the fighters he beat. I mean, he beats Liston twice. He beats Frazier twice. He beats George Foreman. He beat Jerry Quarry. He beat every Ken Norton, Leon Spinks. He beat seven fighters that are currently in the Boxing Hall of Fame, three-time world champion, and who knows, not for him being drafted by U.S. Army, he might have gone down as the greatest boxer, or at worst, the second greatest boxer of all time, behind one Sugar Ray Robinson. Burt Sugar, who's a boxing aficionado historian, has Ali ranked seventh all time in his list of 100 greatest boxers of all time. Has him second. He was ranked second in a couple other polls in terms of heavyweights behind one Joe Louis, which you certainly can't get any argument there. But again, the thing I respect about Ali is, and it's something that you will never see today. This guy, in regards to what you believe in, what your religion is, what your religious beliefs are, you have to respect somebody who is willing to sacrifice everything for what they believe in. I mean, Ali was a devout Muslim, still is, and refused to go to the army due to the fact that it went up against his particular religious beliefs, and he paid for it. I mean, he paid a major price for it in terms of money, in terms of losing 3 or 4 of his prime years as heavyweight champion, being stripped of the heavyweight championship, And if you watch the movie Ali, which I had a chance to recently, again, I've seen a couple of other times before, of course, during the time when he wasn't hot, when he wasn't in the spotlight, when he wasn't champion, it got kind of cold out there. I mean, he's kind of on his own, other than the few family members and close people that stuck to him, and it depicted in the movie. I don't know how much of this is true, that even his Muslim brothers really did not stick by him, you know, in terms of finance, in terms of taking care of money-wise and things of that nature. So he really was on his own during that time period. I mean, he really was on his own during that particular period. But again, he comes back against he had a couple fights again. He fought Jerry Quarry before that classic Joe Frazier, the fight of the century in March of 1971, the first of their three part trilogy, in where, you know, you had two guys, you know, that first fight was as hyped as of a fight as any fight in the history of boxing. I mean, you had two undefeated champions. You had Ali coming back, the anticipation of Ali coming back out of being stripped of his title. You had Frazier. You know, they had two totally different styles. Frazier was a puncher. Ali was a boxer. And those two guys fought wars. I mean, they absolutely fought wars. He beats Ali in that first one. Ali wins the next two fights. There really, to me, were about six or seven fights that defined Ali's career. I'll say the second listing was a joke. The first listing, he was a 7-1 underdog. Beats the living daylights out of Ali in that 1964. Then, of course, you had the three Frazier fights. Then you had the George Foreman fight. The George Foreman fight was the fight that he probably should have retired after he won. That fight, he took a beating with the rope-a-dope, and you know, George Foreman hit as hard as any kind of heavyweight has ever lived. I mean, George Foreman, I mean, you've seen the size and just the physicality of George Foreman. I don't see how anybody could withstand, you know, 12 rounds or 10 rounds of just getting brutally, just getting beat up by George Foreman. But Ali, again, you know, knocks George, uses the rope-a-dope, knocks him, wears him, allows Foreman to wear himself out, then knocks Foreman out. That's probably when he should have just, you know, called it a quits. Or, no, it was the third Frazier fight, I should say, because the first Foreman fight came before the third Frazier fight. So after the third Frazier fight, where, you know, you had Angelo Dundee saying that was the closest to death that he ever seen in terms of a ring, and that, you know, the thriller in Manila, that really should have been the last of what we saw Ali. But like many great boxers, did not know where to hang it up. He loses, you know, he loses to Leon Spinks. He loses to, you know, Trevor Burbick to end his career. And of course, he lost one of his most famous loss probably came against Larry Holmes. Larry Holmes at the time was the best heavyweight in the world. This is 1980. And Ali was done at this point. Larry Holmes beats him like a drum. And to a point where Larry Holmes is screaming to the referees to stop the fight. And after the fight, Larry Holmes is crying after the fight. You know, he looked up to Ali, certainly was, he was his idol growing up as a fan of boxing. So at that time, you know, at that point, Ali was done. And of course, now Ali can't, you know, has a Parkinson's disease. It's still kind of a mystery of whether or not how much the boxing and how much, you know, the pounding that he took contributes to what he has. Like, you don't have to get hit to have Parkinson's disease. I mean, you know, Michael J. Fox has Parkinson's disease. That's not, you know, that has nothing to do with, you know, taking shots to the brain. But a lot of people try to say that I'm sure without the Parkinson's disease that he would have had trouble speaking had he not, because of the shots that he took to his head. If you watch, there was a great special I saw on Monday called Facing Ali. It had 10 fighters that fought Ali over the course of his career. The usual suspect guys like George Foreman, Ken Norton Sr., George Foreman, Joe Frazier was on there, Ernie Shavers, some guys that I hadn't heard of, really, like Ron Lyle. And like I said, 10 guys that fought Ali. And with the exception of Larry Holmes, they had to have subtitles. They had to have subtitles so that you can understand what these guys were saying, because their speech was so muddled that, I mean, it was, you know, mumbling, and I mean, you can understand it, but they, to ensure that you understood what they were saying, what they were talking about, they had subtitles. I mean, that's how beat up a lot of these guys are, as far as, you know, taking all these shots in the head. Again, with the exception, I think Ernie Shavers too. I don't think Ernie Shavers had something. I mean, he might have. I remember Larry Holmes did. Larry Holmes speaks as clear as day. So he probably was the only fighter that did not have the subtitles. Everybody, all the other fighters that got interviewed had subtitles because they couldn't, because they could barely speak. So again, Ali obviously one of the great players of all time, one of the most significant athletes of all time, as far as one of the most beloved athletes of all time. Now, I don't know if there's been ever been a guy of an athlete that walked the face of this earth that has been more beloved than Muhammad Ali. So he is our Black History Profile of the Week. Of course, next week I'll come back with another with someone else. But Muhammad Ali had a record. His career record was 56-5. Again, he beat considered to be the golden age of boxing. He beat everybody that you can beat. He beat every in his era, in his prime. He beat everyone. Even when he was past his prime, he still found a way to become champion again. So that just shows you the skill set as well as the kind of mental toughness that this guy had over the course of his career. Saturday morning wake up call, taking you to, of course, the bottom half of the hour, 12:30. When I return, we'll talk some college basketball, and I also have some thoughts on the Olympics as well. This is the Saturday morning wake up call with Cyril Quinn. Tiger Woods spoke publicly for the first time since he ran his SUV into a tree outside his Florida home. Woods apologized for cheating on his wife and also cited that he had let down his business partners and fans in that order, but I must add. Woods did not give a specific timetable on when he will return to golf. Excuse me. Multiple team sources have reported that former Dallas Maverick Josh Howard's off-the-court behavior contributed to him being traded. Team sources have reported that Howard missed a January 20th game versus the Washington Wizards due to being hungover the night before. Through a text message to ESPN 103.3 FM host Ben Rogers, Howard denied the report. NBA scores: Charlotte pounces Cleveland 110-93. Antoine Jameson struggles in his Cleveland debut. 2 points in just 26 minutes. He goes 0-for-12 from the field. Had a couple free throws as Cleveland fell big time. Washington over Denver 107-97. Dallas 95. Orlando 85. Philadelphia 106. San Antonio 94. New Orleans 107. Indiana 101. Milwaukee 91. Detroit 85. Chicago 100. Minnesota 94. Toronto 106. New Jersey 89. Miami 100. Memphis 87. In double overtime. Phoenix 88. Atlanta 80. Utah in late NBA action defeats Golden State 100-89, and Boston over Portland 96-76. Of course, today, college basketball, a big Saturday, for mid-majors. Bracket Buster weekend for all the mid-majors to show the community that they are worthy of being in the NCAA tournament. It's a weekend, you know, for the Siennas of the world, I'm not even going to say Gonzaga's a mid-major, but for Northern Iowa's of the world, those guys, like, you know, those particular teams to, again, show that they belong in the NCAA tournament. All the, you know, spotlight will be on them. You look at college basketball right now, Syracuse had a huge win on Thursday against Georgetown. Georgetown fans are going to get pissed off at me when I say this, but you saw the difference, but I don't care, of course. You saw the difference between a team that is good enough to get to the Final Four versus a team that is good enough to win a national championship. Syracuse is absolutely good enough to win a championship Georgetown on any given night can beat anybody in the country, but the problem with Georgetown is to how inconsistent they are. You saw the best and the worst out of Georgetown in the the first 30 minutes. They looked awful. Syracuse was playing well, but Georgetown looked awful. The last 10 minutes, Georgetown turns on the switch and almost comes back from a 23-point second-half deficit. But again, Syracuse is a team that can win, absolutely win six games in the NCAA tournament. You know, if I'm looking at the top seeds right now, and I'm looking at teams that, to me, I would go Kansas, Kentucky, Purdue, and Syracuse as number one seeds. Kansas and Kentucky are actually going to be locks to be number one seeds. I mean, that's all there is to it. They're going to be locks to be number one seeds. But those last two number ones are going to be battling each other. Right now, I mean, I could see Purdue probably battling with Duke for one of those spots, and it'll be, you know, those last two seeds you have probably Purdue, Syracuse, Duke, and Villanova. So I think probably, you know, four teams battling for two spots as far as trying to get that number one seed. I mean, West Virginia to a lesser extent, Kansas State to a lesser extent. But as far as teams that can win the national championship right now, they're probably about five or six. Anybody tells you that they're 8 to 10 or 10 to 12, it is a bunch of nonsense. I mean, you have Kansas, you have Kentucky, you have Purdue, you have Syracuse, and Michigan State. To me, those are the five teams I feel can win a national championship. I don't think Duke can win a championship. I don't think Duke is even a Final Four team. I just think the ACC is not very good, and I don't think Villanova can win a national championship. One of the conferences to keep your eye on, the Atlantic 10. Don't look now, but the Atlantic 10 has legitimately 6 to 7 possible NCAA tournament participants. I mean, Temple, Xavier, Rhode Island, Richmond, Dayton, Charlotte, and St. Louis, to a lesser extent, could possibly get into the tournament. All those teams are ranked in the top 41, in terms of RPI. All of them have quality wins on the road and quality non-conference wins. They beat up each other a little bit. Temple, Xavier, Rhode Island, and Richmond are locks. I think Charlotte's getting into. I believe all six of those teams are locks. St. Louis, to a lesser extent, might have some work to do to get in. But the Atlantic 10 has had a nice renaissance in terms of how they've bounced back this year. And to me, this is the best Atlantic 10 has been since going back to the years where you had, you know, UMass, Temple, George Washington, Rhode Island, those particular teams, you know, playing UNC, those particular teams playing as well as they're playing. I mean, the Atlantic 10 is very good, very underrated. Temple played Georgetown, you know, went toe-to-toe with Georgetown. Xavier goes out and goes to Florida, beats, wins a game at Florida, which is certainly not easy. You know, a number of these teams have very good non-conference wins. I mean, Dayton has beaten, you know, Georgia Tech. Charlotte has beaten Louisville. You know, Richmond has some good wins against, you know, Missouri and Florida non-conference. So this is a very underrated conference, a conference that, again, that nobody's paying attention to for whatever reason. But keep your eye on the Atlantic 10, not only for those teams to make the tournament, but for those teams to probably possibly do some damage once they get in the tournament. Still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call final segment. I'll talk about the Winter Olympics, and I'll return back to where we started with, of course, Eldrick Tiger Woods, and we'll get into that. That's still to come on this latest edition, final segment of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call. Tiger Woods spoke publicly for the first time since he ran his SUV into a tree outside his Florida home. Woods apologized for cheating on his wife and cited that he had let down his business partners and fans. Woods did not give a specific timetable on when he will return to golf. Multiple team sources have reported that former Dallas Maverick forward Josh Howard's off the court behavior contributed to him being traded. team sources have reported that Howard missed a January 20th game against the Wizards due to being hungover the night before, though through a text message to ESPN's 103.3 FM host Ben Rogers, Howard has denied the report. NBA scores. Charlotte all over Cleveland, 110-93. Antoine Jameson struggles in his debut, going 0-for-12, just scoring 2 points in 26 minutes of play. Washington over Denver, 107-97. Dallas, 95. Orlando, 85. Philadelphia, 106. San Antonio, 94. New Orleans, 107. Indiana, 101. Milwaukee, 91. Detroit, 85. Chicago, 100. Minnesota, 94. Toronto, 106. New Jersey, 89. Miami, 100. Memphis, 87 in double overtime. Phoenix, 88. Atlanta, 80. Utah, 100. Golden State, 89. And Boston pounds Portland, 96-76. The Winter Olympics. Has anybody noticed the Winter Olympics? I mean, really, does anybody care about the Winter Olympics right now? Because, again, I mean, you have some nice stories. I mean, Shawnee Davis winning a gold medal for the second straight Olympics. Lindsey Vonn coming back from that catastrophic shin injury, whatever. I mean, you're talking about, I don't know how serious that injury was, but, she wins her gold medal. But, I mean, I have to admit, I've not been into the Olympics at all, the Winter Olympics at all, and because you can't tape delay coverage of the Olympics in this day and time. I mean, we're around too much technology as far as computers, text messaging, the whole nine yards. It's impossible not to find out news within 10 minutes of it happening. I mean, this is not 1985. A 1990 where you would have to wait until it came on TV to find out, did this guy win, did this girl, who finished where, who won a gold medal. And I don't see how NBC, I knew Lindsey Vonn had won her gold medal before the event happened, on that particular night. NBC is going to lose a ton of money with these Olympics, reportedly over $200 million, this possibly could be. Don't be surprised in the next Olympics, Winter Olympics, that you see, ESPN have the entire Olympic package as far as the winner goes. Don't be shocked. And I'm not saying that NBC's coverage is bad, but it's just that again, how serious can you take tape delay coverage? Tape delay worked in 1970s, when half the country was asleep for an event occurring, something happening on the West Coast, whether it be an NBA game or some other sporting event. And tape delay in 2010, I mean, you might as well pull out an A-track. I mean, come on, it doesn't. It can't be in this day and age. And again, if you can't get the diehard sports fans to watch the Olympics, then you can absolutely forget about the casual sports fans. Even forget about them. The casual sports fan is going to look, okay, skiing, bobsledding, all right, nice. Next channel. So I personally now, I will be into the hockey, especially if you have a Canada-Russia match, Ovechkin. I mean, it's Crosby versus Ovechkin. So I'll probably check that out. But other than that, I don't see anything that's compelling at all about these Olympics. To me, these are one of the most forgettable Olympics that I've seen in recent memory. And, I mean, I understand the Winter Olympics have a good way to go. As far as compared to the Summer Olympics, I mean, the Summer Olympics have more events. They have, track and field. I mean, they have events that people actually pay attention to, in terms of track and field and the gymnastics and, the basketball and things of that. The swimming is obviously become is a big one. So it's not fair to compare them, but they do. I mean, women Olympics do have the advantage of coming of happening during a time where it's basically a dead period of sports. When you have no NHL, you have the NBA and college basketball in the dog days, and it's the month of February. I mean, February is considered to be one of the dead months of sports, along with July. You know, people are right, talking about hostile baseball in Washington Olympics. And, of course, so, you know, we'll see in regards to what happens with this hockey as far as, again, I hope you get an Ovechkin-Cosby game in terms of Russia and Canada. We'll get back to where we started, of course. That was with Tiger Woods. Woods, of course, you know, came out, made a statement for the first time, you know, since this accident occurred, you know, since this accident occurred with him running his SUV into the tree and having that whole ordeal about, you know, whether or not his wife attacked him with a golf club or what happened with that. But to me, I look at the speech, and to me, it was Woods apologizing to his business partners. It was Woods trying to somehow save his image as being a poster child for Madison Avenue. That's what it was about. It was about Woods trying to regain the trust of the Gatorades of the world, the Accentures of the world, you know, those sponsors that dropped him, those sponsors, you know, that are still with him, you know, Nikes of the world. That's what it was about. He had an opportunity to bring himself down to the level of just being a regular Joe as far as, you know, I made a mistake, you know, I'm trying to fix my marriage, I am, you know, I'm completely humble. That's another thing. And Rick Savone, who used to be the former public relations guy for the Yankees, Mitch talked about it last night. He was, you know, in a statement saying that you didn't see any humility whatsoever. He came off monotone, and he did come off a bit arrogant and when he starts pointing fingers at the media. You know, it was like, yeah, I'm sorry, but by the way, Elon should not be, you know, that's not had nothing to do with this. This is not her, this is on me. You know, how dare you, be paparazzi, chase my daughter, or, you know, take pictures. You know what, you're Tiger Woods, so the paparazzi is going to take pictures of your daughter. It takes pictures of your kids going back and forth to school. And a perfect world is not right, but you know what? You live in a different world that most of us can't even relate to. So you know what? Welcome to the world of the rich and famous, Tiger. But again, he had a chance to put himself in a vulnerable position by allowing the media to ask questions, by just standing in front of the firing line, and he couldn't do it. He micromanaged this whole ordeal as far as having, you know, his closest friends and business partners in the room, having, you know, a couple of media people, and, you know, a pool camera person. And the whole thing was a staged. It was like I mentioned at the top of the program. It was like watching a robot trying to get out human emotion and do a bad job of doing it. Like a robot trying to express himself, trying to become a human, and it didn't work. I wasn't buying it. He came off, he read from a prepared statement that was clearly probably edited and revised about a million times. So, and this, again, this is who Tiger Woods is. He's a businessman. He's a golfer. And he's going to do whatever he wants to do, basically, outside of committing a crime and basically get away with it. And go out there and shoot 63 of the masses, and we'll all forget about this. That's the sports world we live in. But I don't want to hear anything about his foundations. I don't want to hear anything about the schools he's contributed to. I don't want to hear anything about his love for the military. Please don't try to make yourself out to be. Your hero, the hero part of your career is gone, period. That is the end of the rating of the Saturday morning wake-up call. I will see you next week. So long.